Are you in the wilderness spiritually? Has your vision of God dimmed? You need to stay tuned for a way out of the desert. Joshua needed a fresh cleansing from God and a fresh vision of God before the battles in Canaan could begin. Do you face tough times in the days ahead? Like Joshua, you can face them with a clean heart and a renewed sense of God's presence. Stay with us. From Chicago's Moody Church, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. We're now in a series on Getting Started Right, Lessons from the Life of Joshua. Join us as Dr. Lutzer speaks on Let's Get Ready for Battle.
Today's message is going to be very personal. It's the kind of message that would be wonderful to be able to share across a coffee table. I want you to pretend that it's just you and me, and we're talking about our spiritual journey and how we're doing. So since it is personal, let me ask you, how are you doing this past week? For example, how did you do in your battle with sin? Did you have more victories than defeats? Or did you get to the point where you actually think that there are some sins for which God does not provide deliverance? I'm in contact with a young man in the ministry who is going through a great time of a struggle with sensuality. And it's easy to conclude that God just does not deliver us. Well, he does, but it's easy for us to think that he doesn't. How's that part of your life going? That's my question. What about your struggle with circumstances? Are you doing okay? Are you finally seeing God in circumstances? Or do you spend a lot of your time pouting, still chafing, still trying to strive against things you can't change anyway? Has God been able to get through to you so that you know that those circumstances ultimately come from his hand? You're walking in victory. And then what about your conflict? Yeah, I've got to mention it. What about your conflict with people? Oh, to live above with the saints we love, oh, that will be glory. But to live below with the saints, I know. That's another story. Isn't that true? So how's the conflict going? Are you beginning to see God in your conflicts with people? Or is it so discouraging because there you live with people you can't change? Well, take heart. They do too. They live with people that can't be changed. Today what we're going to talk about is walking with God and being in fellowship. And in a sense, it's a message for those of you who are, shall I use the old-fashioned word that we used to hear many, many years ago but don't hear today, backslidden in the Christian life? The story takes place in Joshua chapters 4 and 5. And before we get into the text, and I will be reading some select sections, before we get into the text, I need to give you a little lesson in spiritual geography when you read the Old Testament. What do I mean by that? Well, in the scriptures, Egypt represents the world. That's very clear because when Israel was in Egypt, they were in bondage. They were slaves. They had the mentality of slavery. How do you get out of Egypt? Well, by being redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. They put blood on the doorposts of their houses. And it was through that redemption that they were delivered from Egypt. How are we delivered? Through the blood of the Lamb. Jesus Christ dies and he sets us free from the slavery of sin. So Egypt represents the world. What does Canaan represent? Well, in our hymnody, as you know, we usually think of Canaan as being heaven. But actually, Canaan represents the struggles that we have when we walk with God, but we do claim territory and we do make progress. In heaven, there will be no Philistines. In heaven, we will always be victorious. We will not have defeats. But that's Canaan. God wants us to walk today in Canaan. It's the book of Ephesians where we claim the promises of God. Now let me ask you another question. How long does it take to go from Egypt to Canaan? Well, about 11 days if you take the direct route. But God brought them through the Red Sea, He kept them 2 years. They were there in Sinai. Then they were going to go in at Kadesh Barnea and decided to disobey God, you remember, in unbelief. And God says, you're going to wander in the desert another 38 years, making a full 40 years wandering in the wilderness. What does the wilderness represent? It represents that stage of spiritual experience where we have lost our sense of purpose, where we are floating spiritually and we just don't have it together, and where we are disappointed and discouraged. It's interesting to look at those maps that tell us where they were, and all that you can do is say that they were going in circles. Now, one thing you discover when you're going in a circle and you speed up because you want to make progress, you get to the point where you started from sooner. And that's all they were doing. I would think that they were naming every cactus and renaming it. Nothing to do for 40 years, 38 particularly. And that's the way it was. Somehow in the wilderness of our journey, we lose our purpose. And secondly, we forget that God is with us. We don't see God. That's why I have to ask you today, do you see God in your circumstances, in your conflicts? Before they would go to bed at night, after they had that snack for manna for a snack, I should say, manna for breakfast, manna for lunch, manna for dinner. We need a snack before we go to bed. Good. We've got some manna. They'd always have a discussion. You find this throughout the text, especially in the book of Numbers and so forth, where it gives us some of these details. Two topics. Number one, is the Lord with us or not? That was always number one. Number two was, shouldn't we appoint a different leader and go back to Egypt? Now, I'm talking to those of you who have left your first love. You belong to that category of backsliders. You've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. You've been redeemed out of Egypt, but you're wandering in the desert. The thing that you have lost sight of is God. All that you can see is sand, unending gravel, and purposelessness. Today I want you to be able to see God again. And now we're going to go into the text. They're brought across the Jordan River, and where do they come? Chapter 4, verse 19. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And that's where Jericho, Joshua, I should say, set up the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. And he said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their fathers, what do these stones mean? Tell them that Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. And tell them about the faithfulness of God. Now, what does Gilgal mean? In Hebrew, it means circle. But God says, I'm going to take that place that means circle and invest in it a new meaning. And he's going to invest the meaning of, you know, the idea of a circle. We think of a wheel. We think of something rolling. You'll notice in chapter 5, verse 9. So the Lord said to Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. So the place has been called Gilgal to this day. It means to roll away. What disgrace had to be rolled away? Well, the disgrace of Egypt. In Egypt, they were slaves. They did not decide what they were going to do. Others decided that for them. Here they are under people who served strange gods, and they had to be subject to them. It was not just the slavery. It was the mentality of slavery that had to be taken away. And some of you, remember this is personal, some of you may have in your past some disgrace that has never been rolled away, and it continues to hamper you in your Christian experience. It could be a divorce. It could be immorality. It could be some disastrous decision that you have made. And you wish that it would depart, but there it stands. Today, I have been praying that God will give you the grace to see it rolled away. One day I met a woman who had a tattoo on her arm, and it was very evident. It was very visible, and so I had the nerve, sometimes maybe too much nerve, but I did have the nerve to ask her where it came from, and she said, I was dating a fellow who was an alcoholic, He was not a good man. And she said, he did that to me. He left that tattoo there. And she said, now I'm married to someone else. I wish I could get it off. But she said, I can't. There are some of you listening to this message who have a tattoo on your soul. It's that disgrace. It's the shame. And because of that, you're in the wilderness of your experience. And God says, I want to roll all that away so that you can get on with blessing in the land of Canaan. Well, now, with that background, what was there at Gilgal? What helps us in our spiritual journey? First of all, Gilgal was a place of remembrance. Remembrance. I spoke about this last time. You remember there were 12 stones that were taken out of the Jordan River, and then they were taken and they were set up at Gilgal, and that was a monument to God. If you read the text, you discover that there was another monument actually in the middle of the river, which Israel could not see after Jordan began to flow again. And that symbolized death. God says, I'm going to symbolize death over there, and this is resurrection. You see, what the Jordan River, spiritually speaking, symbolizes is a death to self. We finally come to the same place that George Mueller did when he said, there came a day when George Mueller died. Listen to me very carefully. The struggles that you and I have, the lack of victory over sin, the excuses that we make for our desert experience, the pouting and the criticism, all of that sometimes comes as a result of the fact that we have not died to self. And Jesus said that except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. That's what the Jordan is all about. But it was a place of remembrance. They put up a monument to God. And you know, my friend, throughout the scripture, God continually tells us that we should remember him. And in our case, of course, it's not stones in a Jordan River, nor anywhere else, so far as we know, but there are things that we can do. I'm not very good at journaling, but occasionally I do write things down. I have a book where when I moved and when something significant happens in my life, I write it down. And the benefit is overwhelming, because when I'm discouraged, I can go back and I can say, look at where I've been. Look at the times of discouragement. Look at the times of hopelessness. And look at the answers to prayer. And to know that at the end of the day, God brought me through the past. He's going to be there for me in the present and in the future. So when you want to fight a battle, remember God's faithfulness. Read the Word, where there are many stories, of course, in the Bible about the faithfulness of God, but also think about God's faithfulness in your life. He's been there through it all. And that's what God was trying to teach the Israelites, and that's what he wants us to learn as well. So glad that you have joined us today. We hope that you will stay tuned next time as I continue the message entitled, Getting Ready for Battle. We've got some battles ahead of us. Let's get ready, and in the name of the Lord, let's win them.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Erwin Lutzer has brought part one of Let's Get Ready for Battle, another message in his series, Getting Started Right, Lessons from the Life of Joshua. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago to help you understand God's roadmap for your race of life. Getting Started Right can be yours as a six-message CD series. This series is our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us again tomorrow for our next Running to Win.